This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is an episode that I've eagerly awaited because we're going to cover a topic that I think is of general interest to most people. The topic is sex. Yes, sex. And its relationship to health. It turns out that sex is not just frivolous. It's just not, merely for amusement. There's actually some very, very strong biological rationale other than procreation for continuing sexual activity well into your advanced years. And today we're going to talk to Dr. Lindsay Berkson or Devaki. Is it Devaki or Devaki Berkson? I've never quite...
An easy way to remember how to pronounce my first name is I gave Dave a key to open the door. So my first name is Dave a key, but because most people can't pronounce it, I often go by Lindsay. I know the woman who wrote Out of Africa said you need to have a new name every 10 years because we become a bigger person than one name can hold. So I guess I have several names here.
Right. And I think that your name, Dave a key, comes to us from your experience working with yoga in yoga practice and yoga study, right? If I'm not mistaken, it's Indian derivation.
That's exactly right. Many years ago, after the Beatles came back from the Maharishi and yoga started to first seed in America, I thought this was really amazing. And I was thirsty to take a look at how other civilizations looked at medicine. So I went over to India and lived there for a year and studied Ayurvedic medicine and yoga and organic gardening. And I became very passionate about yoga and looking at mindfulness because I'd been so academic. And I was a yoga teacher for 25 years, and I ended up living with Swami Satchidananda in integral yoga for a long time. And he took your own name and then he made it into an Indian name to remind you of your higher self while you walk upon this earth with your earthly footprint. So it's a really wonderful thing to have a spiritual name and a real name because it's always a reminder to take the high road or at least consider it.
You also have a very strong science and nutrition background because I've known you for, I hate to say, but 30 plus years. You've been on the scene for a really long time. And you studied with Jonathan Wright and with Alan Gaby, which is a really great place to be in the 1980s because they were doing some really wonderful work exploring new avenues in nutrition.
Well, Alan and I were students, and in 1977, we took our first rotation in integrative medicine with Dr. Wright, who really set the scene for my career because he was so interested. It was only a few years later that he wrote the first prescription for bioidentical hormones and became known as the father of bioidentical hormones. But he was so interested in the gut, so interested in hormones, so interested in the bigger picture, and that set my scene. And Alan, he fixed Alan and me up on a date while we were doing that rotation together. And once we figured out that we weren't a match made in heaven, all three of us have stayed lifelong friends. In fact, Jonathan wrote one of the forewords for this new book, and Alan gave it one of the advanced praises. And we all hang out together our whole life. We're buds. We call ourselves gluten-free muffin tops, but we don't have a muffin top.
No, indeed. I mean, I can attest to that, having seen you. So the title of the book, the new book, is about sex. So tell us about the book.
I never in a million years, Ron, and yes, I love that we have a long lineage too. I have long been a fan of yours. I love your voice. I love what you put out into the world. I love your elbow grease. So thank you for having me on the show, by the way.
My pleasure.
Been looking forward to it.
Great pleasure.
I never in a million years thought that I would be writing a book on intimacy. If you told me this a few years ago, I'd say you were crazy because it seemed so far from topic. My pretty much 46-year career, that's what it's been, has been a focus on hormones and nutrition in the gut. But a few years ago, I was contacted since this is my 21st book. And I have about 13 books already out on hormones. And for the last so many years till it closed, I was a scholar at a hormone estrogen think tank at Tulane University that was associated with the med school. And the few years ago, a surgeon and a urologist were planning on opening up 100 erectile dysfunction clinics. So they said to me, we would like a book for the reception table and we'd like to it to be a collaborative effort. Would you dive into the literature on hormones, but also on intimacy a bit? Well, I'd never done that before. We cut a deal. And when I started to do due diligence, because I'm scientifically oriented, so everything I wanted to say needed to be backed by peer-reviewed studies and see where the trend of the science really went, I was literally stunned that there was so much literature on the benefit of intimacy, and then we're going to go into what I found. But it wasn't making headline news because sex and intimacy has kind of got a stigmata to it. And there is even a call to really bring it up into the clinical trenches and discuss it with your patients because the benefits are up there with veggies and exercise and statins for heart health. And the article that made me realize that there was no way getting away from having to write this book, being a healer and looking at health from every single angle, especially gut, mind, hormones, and it turns out that sex starts in the gut, of all things, is that I bumped into this study sponsored by the Women's Health Initiative. It was called Sexual Satisfaction and Cardiovascular Disease. And the Women's Health Initiative is a constellation of studies taking a look at our aging women and how do we keep them healthier longer and not topple Medicare. And it's famous for the hormone study, but it's got bone studies and it's got heart studies, blah, blah. So they know that men, one of the first signs of heart disease is erectile dysfunction. So they wanted to know if it was the same way with women. Do women lose their libido as a sign of heart disease? That's why the name of that of this study. So they looked at almost 94,000 women from 40 institutions for 14 years, and they figured out that if a woman could look back over her lifetime and say she had regular satisfying intimacy with someone she respected and loved, she had better blood vessel and cardiovascular heart health than if she exercised, did veggies, was on statins. It was extremely significant in terms of health. And at the same time this was happening, many of my younger patients come in and don't even care about sex anymore. That's like an epidemic of young people who are flatlined. And so the two things were coming at me at the same time. So I knew I had to go deeper into this.
And the book is entitled Sexy Brain, right?
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, sex is beneficial for us, but is sex more than just yet another aerobic exercise, like, you know, 10 minutes on the Stairmaster, you know, get your heart rate up, you know, get it down, and, you know, end of story, burn off, you know, 45 calories in the average bout of sex?
That's a great question. And that's why I called it Sexy Brain, because the literature was so clear cut that intimacy, and it doesn't have to be intercourse. So if you're older or your husband is paralyzed or there's other issues in your life where you don't have the normal coming together of two human beings in the bedroom, these benefits start with bonding and hugging and eye contact, but of really being connected, human connection. And these benefits aren't just like being on the elliptical at the gym. They release chemicals that protect our brain, that protect our gut, that protect our immune system and heart, that make our cardiomyocyte, the basic functional cell of the heart, live longer and die less prematurely. The benefits were so astounding physiologically, and then they go from there. It's a body, mind, spirit thing. There's a lot of research to show that couples that know how to really hoochie-coochie or have hugging and sensuality and connection throughout the day, it doesn't just have to be in the bedroom. True human connection, they get divorced less. They stay together more. The family's more stable. We could go on and on about research about this, but nature never does anything without a reason. And she created pleasure, I figured out while writing this book, and I didn't know this when I started it, so that hopefully, not always, humans would have healthier brains and be healthier and then have relationships that endure, because great intimacy is a great relationship glue, and then have better, stable home life for the child be taken care of. So great intimacy and pleasure, hopefully it ends in a more stable home life for that next generation. Mm-hmm. That's partially what it's about.
Indeed. Well, so you alluded earlier to a what seems to be an epidemic of sexual apathy that may even be affecting younger people. Where's the evidence for that, and what are some possible causes?
That is another great question. I was at a conference at IFM, the Institute of Functional Medicine, and there was a gastroenterologist and a urologist on stage talking about different epidemics of what's going on with our health. And they were saying there is an epidemic of hypogonadism, in other words, insufficient or not healthy testosterone in younger and younger men. Mm-hmm. And just like we're seeing sleep apnea and type 2 diabetes and obesity in 7, 8, 9-year-old kids, we are seeing sexual dysfunction and hormonal imbalance issues like polycystic ovarian syndrome and other things in younger males and females. And people in office see the patients come in and say, I'm 25 years old and I have no libido and my mate's a great person and I endure it for my mate. Well, they're not getting the benefits that nature intended by enduring intimacy with their mate. And being that I wrote Hormone Deception 24 years ago now, Ron.
That's a wonderful book, by the way. And I think I recall that I interviewed you then.
You did.
Yes, it was in the previous incarnation of this program when we were on the radio. It was before the era of podcasts. The program was called Health Talk. And yeah, Hormone Deception is quite interesting. So take off on that subject, please.
Well, that was one of the very first books. There were three books that came out in 3 months that were the first three books, breakthrough books, on this whole idea that there were pollutants in our air, food, and water that can hijack our hormones, since they were called endocrine disruptors. Now, January 31st, Harvard had the School of Public Health had a public forum, and they called it hormone-altering chemicals. But it's now considered the number one threat to human beings, is that we have all these this chemical soup that can hijack the way our healthy hormones work.
Sometimes
and
referred
when
to
you
as,
hijack
as
hormones,
gender benders as well, right?
That is true. They've got lots of names, and that can open up a big Pandora's box for us to chat about, especially with the millennia kids. But, you know, our hormones are our main signaling system in our body. They're like our own internet, our physiologic internet. And a hormone sends a signal to proteins in the shape of a satellite dish. And that protein satellite dish is called a receptor, and it's supposed to receive the signal. But pollutants in the air, food, and water can nestle on in there and block those signals. But those receptors are set up to receive hormone signals in parts per million and trillion, which is really difficult for the human mind to even grasp that infinitesimal. Like one part per trillion is one drop in 600 railroad trains of water.
Very homeopathic. You know, people poo-poo the idea of homeopathy, but we're talking these tiny, tiny, just a few handful of molecules can create major effects in the body. And then we dismiss, they're low levels of pollution, but, you know, the body's resilient. We can handle it. Well, think again, because we're seeing consequences.
That's exactly right. So because there's so many chemicals in the environment, only 2% of them have ever even been tested for endocrine disrupting side effects, but they have additive effects, like there's so many of them that together they might have worse effects than they do, or when we metabolize them, then when the metabolites, the breakdown products, might be more offensive to our hormones than even the parent compound, the plastic, the laminate floor, the adhesives, the stain on your cabinets, you know, it's everywhere. So apparently, the hormone system of young men and women, and this starts really in the womb, which is the greatest exposure when an adult is exposed, and then the egg and the sperm are exposed, and then the fetus in the womb is exposed. So there's all these windows of exposure. But fast forward it to how it's manifesting is our hormones have been bended, disrupted, mimicked, whatever you want to say, and we are having hormonal imbalances and hormonal dysfunction at younger and younger ages.
And in your book, you actually reveal a personal history that kind of illustrates this phenomenon. You had some health problems, which I believe you've largely overcome, and maybe this has been part of the rationale for you to turn to this type of medicine in an effort to get your own issues straightened out.
Well, the model compound to understand how chemicals in the environment mimic our own hormones and can hijack them and be dangerous to us. The model compound was the most powerful endocrine disruptor ever invented, and it was invented by the same physician scientist named Charles Dodds, D-O-B-B-S, who invented plastics, which is why plastics are very estrogenic, and this medicine was very estrogenic. Mm. He liked estrogen molecules, this guy.
Yeah.
And it was given, unfortunately, it was hailed at the time like a prenatal vitamin.
Mm.
And it was given as either a medicine to thwart off potential miscarriage or a prenatal vitamin. It was sold by 365 different companies. And it was given to pregnant women in America and all around the world for 36 years to millions of women. And many of the children born to those women exposed, depending on the time of the exposure and the dose, had cancers, had various all kinds of health issues. There's been a cohort, a group of people who've been followed that were born to these women given this drug, and it was published by the NIH about 2 years ago. They were followed for 30 years now. I was one of the very first years that my mother was given this, and they have a higher incidence of a multiple length of list of diseases, no matter how well they lived. And many women my age who were exposed to the dose that my mother was given when I was in her womb are pretty much dead.
Yeah, is that DES or is it Bendectin? Which one was that?
It's the nickname, and you're right, Ron, is DES, which stands for diethylstilbestrol.
Okay.
And so for many years I was very ill, and I got into health really not because I was ill, but because I loved it, and it made sense to me that regular medicine wasn't really figuring out why people were ill. They were basically giving pharmaceuticals for symptoms and keeping people on a pharmaceutical conveyor belt. But throughout my life, I was ill many, many times, and I started getting cancers, and every time I had a cancer, I would lose an organ. And so ultimately, I became somebody who was very ill, couldn't get out of bed, lost 7.5 organs, 18 lymph nodes, was diagnosed with multiple cancers, and I was somebody who got the memo in my teens about raising organic food and being an athlete. My mother was an athlete, so I was an athlete my whole life. I mean, I was doing what people are trending to do now to get well, and I was getting ill, having done everything right, but getting the wrong answers. So I read an article about endocrine disrupting compounds early in the 1990s, and I thought, oh my God, I got to write a book on this.
Mm.
And while I was writing that book, I was shocked that animals, especially at Duke University and Research Triangle Park, where a lot of the research takes place, when they expose pregnant animals to this DES, which is the most powerful endocrine disrupting compound, when the next generations were born, the illnesses they had were the same exact ones I had. And the tumors they had were the same I had. Mm. So while I was writing that book, without knowing I was a DES daughter, I rode away for my mother's microfiche birth records and got them just before they were shredded, because she was, you know, much older.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that my mother was given injections and pills and very high dose, and I was the very victim of the book that I was writing about.
Wow. So this is clearly part and parcel of what may be afflicting some people in terms of sexual dysfunction. What about, and you write about the effects of several downers on sexual functioning and sexual interest. Among them, you know, we now have the statistic that fully a quarter of women, and perhaps a large percentage of young women, are taking antidepressants. What about the effect of antidepressants on libido in women?
Antidepressants has been known in both men and women to decrease libido, and part of the reason it does it is it blocks oxytocin, it blocks nitric oxide, all those things that Viagra and the other drugs that help up you with that in that department do. So it's interesting that we can use other things to boost mood better in women without giving them a pharmaceutical that has such negative side effects on life, because where this book took me, that I had no idea it was going to do that when I started writing about it, was to understand really how important human connection is. And in our life with so much social media and so much socialness, we actually have become very antisocial. Hmm. And people can, texting is the new talking. Mm-hmm. People can edit and delete and multitask, but not be fully committed to the conversation. Whereas real connection takes full commitment to meet someone in the wild belly to belly, and you don't know where that conversation is going to go. And we email and we text and we have porn that anesthetizes us. And mm-hmm. there's new movements in young kids. I went to a thing called Circling the other night to just check this out. And it's a spiritual psychological movement is a backlash to the lack of connection. And there were about 40, 60 people in Austin, Texas, downtown, all saying that they felt like they had so much busyness and flurry of this non-authentic communication in their life, but they really felt isolated and lonely, even if they were married. And they came together to figure out a way to be seen and be heard and learn how to connect again, which is where nature benefits us with these molecules, which then protect the next generation. So it's really interesting to see that our society is ill in the fact that we are longing for connection and we don't have it the way it's our birthright.
Mm-hmm. What about the effect of oral contraceptives? I mean, we talk about, on the one hand, natural hormone replacement, but oral contraceptives, from my experience working clinically, often put a damper on sexual response in women.
That is such a great question. I have my next book coming out in about 8 or 9 months, if it's done, and it's my second gut book. And it's 675 pages. It's somewhat of a textbook. And I have a huge section on oral contraceptives because I specialize in inflammatory bowel disease a lot. And I notice that many women who come in.
We should compare notes because I'm doing a lot of that work myself now.
Are you?
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm lecturing for A4M in September on inflammatory bowel disease and a few other things. So we should definitely compare notes.
Yeah, I'll send you some stuff because I've been doing a lot on that front lately.
Have you noticed when you do your intakes, Ron, that often women will say, I initiated birth control pills about a year or two before this started. Maybe even they went on Accutane or antibiotics. You know,
certainly
maybe
Accutane. Certainly Accutane, right. Certainly antibiotics. Didn't know about birth control pills, but I'll have to look for that.
Well, when I've noticed this clinically as a pattern. So I went into the literature, and there are so many articles on thousands and thousands of patients already establishing this link between oral contraceptives and a higher risk of inflammatory bowel disease, that it's almost malpractice not to give a woman a script for oral birth control pill and say, do you have a family risk of inflammatory bowel disease? Do you know you use up these nutrients that help protect your gut wall? You should, you know, all this kind of stuff. But they do make the brain stop talking. This healthy lifelong crosstalk with your sex hormones goes on with your brain, and birth control pills shuts that crosstalk off. And when you're on them long enough and you lose, every drug makes you lose one or two nutrients, but birth control pills, you probably know all this, rinse multiple nutrients, more than almost any other medication out there, yet women aren't told to replace those nutrients. And it also dings their their sexuality. You need zinc for your hormones to work, and birth control pills makes it very hard to hold zinc inside your red blood cells where they do their magic. And all hormones dock into the binding domain in the gene with atoms of zinc in the shape of a finger. So scientifically, that's called a zinc finger. And when you're minus that zinc finger because you're on birth control pills and then you're not eating a really great diet and you're running around living like everybody else is stressed 24/7, then your hormones can't work. And that's one of the ways that hormones dings down the natural desire and connection and benefits from those connections that nature intended. So younger and younger people are acting like 70 and 80 year old people used to act. They're just, intimacy ain't what it used to be.
Thank God we're baby boomers. That's all I have to say. Okay, this is a good point at which to pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts. Excellent discussion on human sexuality and its importance, its crucialness in relationship to overall health. No, it's not merely another recreational activity. Nothing wrong with that. But there are some real profound health benefits of intimacy. And our guest is the author of Sexy Brain. She's Dr. Devaki Bergson, who has written a great survey of everything related to human sexuality. And when we return, we're going to talk about some more about this issue, about the real science behind this, about health benefits of sex. We'll also talk about solutions, you know, what to do for a flagging libido. Is it hormone replacement therapy? Are there other therapies that can get things going again so that you can partake of a healthy, balanced sex life that provides you with opportunities for an intimacy? I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.